Historian Chris Bray, himself a former soldier, has the new book, Court Martial, How Military Justice Has Shaped America from the Revolution to 9/11 and Beyond. It is an account of how military justice has shaped American society since the nation's beginnings. With an eye for a narrative, Bray tells the story of military justice from the institution of the court-martial in the earliest days of the Republic to contemporary arguments over how to use military courts to try foreign terrorists or soldiers accused of sexual assault. Throughout, Bray shows that the separate justice system of the armed forces has often served as a proxy for America's ongoing arguments over equality, privacy, discrimination, security, and yes, liberty. Chris Bray is a former infantry sergeant in the United States Army. He holds a PhD in history from UCLA. Again, the name of the book is Court Martial, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Chris Bray to the roundtable this morning. Chris, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to the subject of wanting to discuss military justice?
You know, it was an accident. I was working in Worcester, Massachusetts, on a completely different topic. And I was frustrated. I was working at the American Antiquarian Society, and I said, I'm going to go take a walk and clear my head. And I was walking down the street, and I passed what was then the State of Massachusetts Military Museum and Archives. And I just noticed the building, and I thought I'd go inside and see if I could find information there about what I was working on. And I stumbled across court-martial records from the early Republic and started reading them. And I happened across a bunch of cases in which militia officers who were at private functions, private dinners, private community receptions, things like that, not on duty, not in the military, not leading troops, had insulted political figures or said things that offended other people, and they were tried by court-martial. And so they had these arguments over, you know, when am I a soldier? What can you try me for? What can I be punished for? And I thought the arguments were so compelling and the things they were talking about were so exciting and fundamental that right there I threw out my dissertation topic, called my dissertation committee, and I said, I'm working on military justice. People are having big conversations here about the nature of authority, the nature of power, when you can be punished, how you can be punished, and for what. And I just found it incredibly compelling, purely as an accident, and have never stopped.
One of the things that makes this story so compelling is how this system, military justice, is so separate from the civilian justice system, and yet, as you point out in the book, is so entwined with our society and our culture.
It is, and we always want to think that the military is some fundamentally different creature, and the big point for me, the big takeaway, is that the military is America. The things that have been controversies in the military have been controversies in all of American society at the same time. The Army in the 1840s had a tremendously serious problem with Irish-American immigrants who had enlisted as privates being punished in extraordinarily harsh and brutal ways by nativist officers, and a lot of them deserted, ended up being an incredibly dramatic story. A lot of them deserted and went to fight for Mexico during the war with Mexico, were captured fighting for the other side and executed in mass executions. But at exactly the moment that American society as a whole was arguing over the place of Irish immigrants and struggling with nativist backlash to immigration, the Army was experiencing the same thing. African-American soldiers have fought for over a century over their place in the military, over separate discipline, separate pay. During the Civil War, they were paid less than white soldiers, and there were black soldiers who put down their weapons and said, we won't fight anymore until you pay us the same as white soldiers, and they were executed for mutiny. So the debates, the discussions that have gone on in all of American society always show up in the military. The military justice system always has to deal with America as a whole.
I want to talk a little bit about how you divide the book and how you organize it. Each of the chapters focuses on a specific social conflict and ultimately the story of how the military courts came to grips with that particular issue. How was that a good way of telling the story, which of course is very overarching and very overlapping?
It's a struggle because there are so many things going on. There are court-martials that try American soldiers. There are military commissions that have tried Sioux and Modoc warriors and sentenced them to death in events that led to more mass executions. There are events overseas and domestic events and the reform of military law. It's a really complicated story, and so what I've tried to do is break it down chronologically to show how justice developed in concert with, in step with, what was going on in the rest of society. And so the chapters are organized chronologically and organized by the things that were going on at the moment. It was a struggle to organize it. I hope I've succeeded. But there's just been so much that's happened in military justice in 250 years, and I've tried to make it as clear as I can.
You do make it very clear, and it is a great way of presenting it. I have a very simple question that I know has a very complex answer, I think, but let me just ask it, and we'll go from there, which is it a good system? Is a court-martial, is military justice, is it a good system?
Yes, and we really, you know, not everyone believes that now. We always, the joke is that military justice is an oxymoron, or military justice is to justice as military music is to music. And that's been true. That's been true, yeah, for a long time. That was true well into the 20th century. There was a case in during World War I where a group of African-American soldiers had been abused by Houston police officers while they were stationed at a post outside Houston. And there was a riot. Police officers were killed. And the Army held mass trials. They tried 54 soldiers at once, executed 13 of them in the dead of night, built gallows, executed them, tore the gallows down so nobody knew it had happened, and the commander who ordered that execution, the local major general in charge of that army region, reported the execution to his superiors after the execution. He said, oh, by the way, I've executed 13 soldiers. For a long, long time, the military justice system was incredibly arbitrary and incredibly cruel. It wasn't really a system of law. It was a system of power and command. And we talk about it as though it hasn't changed, or though it hasn't changed as very much. But there have been enormous changes, and the changes began in part because of that case in World War I. For a century now, we have been debating, particularly within the military, we've been debating the nature of military justice. And Congress and the military have undertaken a series of enormously important reforms, 1916, 1920, 1948, the creation of what we now have as a system of military law, the Uniform Code of Military Justice that went into effect in 1951. The military justice system got judges for the first time in 1968. There has been this march toward what people call the civilianization of military courts. And if you went to a military trial today, if you went to watch a court-martial today, it would look just like a trial in a civilian federal courtroom. The rules of evidence are modeled on the federal rules of evidence in civilian courts. There's a prosecutor, there's a defense lawyer, there's a judge. The court itself, the panel of the court, operates like a jury. And they're incredibly complex, incredibly law-driven, and very, very careful and very fair. You know, Bo Bergdahl is accused of deserting years ago and came home, what has it been, a year now? And he was supposed to go on trial in August of this year. His trial has been postponed well into 2017, so his defense lawyers can have time to review classified documents so that the prosecution can do careful, serious discovery. For most of American history, deserters were tried in the field. It took about 5 minutes, and then they were executed. So military justice has been incredibly unfair, and it's not anymore. It has been, it has gone through extraordinarily serious reforms and modernization.
And of course, there's complexities to the Bo Bergdahl case that go beyond simple desertion.
Yes, and I think that the court-martial system is well-equipped to deal with that. A court-martial has tremendous discretion in things like sentencing. And they can take into account the fact that he was held as a prisoner. They can take into account the fact that he suffered after he allegedly deserted and was captured. And they can consider that if he's convicted, and we don't know if he will be or not, he has a right to a fair trial. But if he's convicted, they can take all of that into account. And I think they would be more likely to take it into account now than they have been through much of history when court-martials were a lot more cruel.
I'm a little hazy on this particular aspect of the case, but let me just ask this question because it goes to the overall an overall question about court-martials and about military justice. And that is, my understanding of their when the case originally came up, there was a moment where there was a commanding officer who said, okay, that this will not even go further into the system, and this is enough, and then that decision was overridden. So is that correct? I mean, there was a point where he could have, at that point, just been released from the Army, and the matter would have been ended.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there what, and I guess this is really no different than a normal court proceeding, but in the sense that it really comes down to one person, right?
It does, and that's the ongoing controversy about military justice and the thing that reformers won't let go. The person who recommended that Bo Bergdahl not be prosecuted wasn't a commander. It was an investigating officer appointed by the convening authority,
okay,
the commander who had the authority to convene a court-martial in Bergdahl's case. And in the court-martial system,
is that I'm sorry to interrupt, but a higher-ranking officer within the armed forces, though?
Yeah, there are three levels of court-martial, and Bo Bergdahl is being tried by a general court-martial, and general court-martials are convened by general officers. They're convened by commanders at a very high level. And that's what's happened in this case, is that the convening authority appointed a subordinate officer to investigate the case and to make a recommendation to him. And the subordinate officer said, I don't think this merits a court-martial. But in the court-martial system, the decision belongs to the commander. The decision belongs to the convening authority. And the commander decided he wanted a court-martial convened. And so that's what happens. A convening officer in the military has the authority to make that decision, whatever his lawyers think. Although there's much more legal review and legal advice now than there has been through most of history.
We touched on this, and you read about it, and this case is a good example of it. But how do you make that as pure as it can be, especially when what's going on in the outside world, the non-military world, is a political swarm and a great deal of toxicity on both sides, and to keep that from leaking into the court-martial proceedings? Or is that impossible to do?
I don't think it's impossible, and I don't think ultimately that political conversation outside of the military will have a decisive effect on what people in the military who end up on that court-martial panel will think. There is an important concept now in military justice that hasn't existed for most of American history called unlawful command influence. And the concept of unlawful command influence is that people who have authority over people who are trying a court-martial can't say, you know, I want this guy convicted, or I want cases like this to result in convictions, which has happened a lot. Where we've been debating sexual assault prosecution in the military, and both the Commandant of the Marine Corps and President Obama have said in public comments, we expect to see prosecutions in these kinds of cases. And those comments have led to charges being dismissed against people accused of sexual assault in the military because, in effect, a commander was saying to his subordinates, I order you to go convict people, or I want you to go convict people. And those cases were thrown out. But unlawful command influence requires command. It requires a direct relationship. And the premise of military justice is that the people who sit on a court-martial exercise independent judgment, and they disregard political controversy. They disregard people outside the system, outside their chain of command, telling them what to do. And I think they can. I think they can do it. I think they have for many decades in cases that involved tremendous political pressure. There was, there was a case in the 1950s of a Marine Corps drill instructor who led his platoon. He thought his platoon was not becoming well trained. That they were still indolent. That they still didn't respond to orders well. And so he decided to lead them into a tidal creek late at night to toughen them up and to discipline them. And a bunch of them weren't swimmers, and they were swept away in the water and they drowned. And his trial was an enormous political circus. It was, there were news photographers taking pictures of the bodies coming up out of the river. And national news coverage. The commandant of the Marine Corps showed up the next day and said, "We're going to bring in prosecutions in this case." And so those court-martial members had to deal with enormous political pressure, and I think they brought in a reasonable verdict. High-profile cases, high-profile political cases are not unusual in the military.
The book is a fascinating one. It was really eye-opening for me, and it's really just damn impressive. The one thing I came, and this is just a throwaway line, but the one thing I came away wondering is why, with all the courtroom dramas that I read and all of that stuff, why don't we do, I mean, there's some TV stuff, but we don't do a lot in the court-martial, do we, as far as the fictionalization of it?
We don't, and it's such great stuff. And
yeah,
actually,
it's fascinating.
Sometimes it scares me when Hollywood does fictionalize military justice, because it becomes embarrassing and silly, but there are incredible cases, and it's an incredibly dramatic system of law.
Well, the book is marvelous. It's Court Martial: How Military Justice Has Shaped America from the Revolution to 9/11 and Beyond. It is published by Norton. Chris Bray, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.